From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. And on this day, some state workers will get a 6% raise if they approve a new union contract, but that raise comes with a price. And we'll go to a training for people in Lewiston, Auburn, who want to respond if they see someone being harassed or threatened. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Since his first day in office, Governor Paul LePage has been a critic of organized labor and has specifically targeted state worker unions. LePage has long tried to pass legislation to stop unions from charging membership fees to workers who choose not to join, known as fair share. And as Mal Leary reports, he's taking a new approach that appears to be working.
The state's largest state employee union, the Maine State Employees Association, has agreed to send a new 2-year contract to members of its 4 largest bargaining units for ratification. It would increase wages by 6%, but would also eliminate mandatory union fees for state workers who choose not to join the union. That so-called fair share provision generates funds to cover the union's cost of collective bargaining, but also provides the money to pay for lobbying the legislature. In a weekly appearance on Bangor radio station WVOM, LePage denounced that he is seeking through negotiation what he's not been able to achieve through legislation.
To have to pay extortion money to have a job is really bad. That's not the American way. And so that's how I feel about it. And I'm trying to buy our way out of it, basically.
Over 9,000 state workers are covered by the tentative contract. MSEA officials say they agreed to send the proposal to workers for a vote because without the provisions, eliminating fair share, the best LePage would offer was 1% over 2 years. But the smaller union, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, which represents over 900 state correctional officers and mental health employees, rejected that fair share elimination. LePage says he believes those workers wanted to accept the proposal.
My understanding was that the local negotiators for the unions were in favor of doing the same thing MSEA did. It was the out-of-state bigwigs that said no. And so, voila, there we are. Now we know what unions are all about.
That is absolutely false.
AFSCME's Jim Durkin says it was not union staff, but individual workers serving on the negotiating team that made the decision.
This tentative agreement was negotiated with a committee comprised of AFSCME members working in corrections and mental health.
Durkin says he is proud of the committee for taking a long-term view of keeping the union strong instead of agreeing to a short-term pay raise. But efforts to weaken unions at the bargaining table have been going on for some time in the United States, says UMaine labor historian Charles Scontris.
This is all taking place in a wider conservative climate since the 1970s. My God, it's been nothing but concessionary bargain, you know, give backs, call for changes in work rules.
Scontris notes there is a case from California pending before the United States Supreme Court that could help LePage achieve his goal if the court votes to take it up. It challenges the fair share provisions of a teachers union as unconstitutional. The two main unions, however, won't be able to wait for that case to play out, as both the MSEA and AFSCME contracts need to be put before the rank and file for a vote by August 30th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Prisoners, mental health advocates, children's advocates, and families of people who were incarcerated are urging the Maine Department of Corrections not to do away with contact visits in county jails. The DOC is considering eliminating that requirement and allowing jails to switch to video visitation instead. Jail administrators say too many drugs are being smuggled into their facilities. But critics say the proposed policy is cruel and would run counter to the department's own guiding principles. Susan Sharon has more.
At a public hearing, no one spoke in favor of the policy change, something that a growing number of jails around the country are embracing as a way to reduce contraband and staffing costs. The Androscoggin County Jail in Auburn is one jail that's adopting the practice. In an interview earlier this year, Androscoggin County Sheriff Eric Sampson said he hoped video visitation would cut down on in-person visits.
We're hoping that with this increased form of contact through the video visitation, that maybe we'll have less traffic in and out here, and it'll put less stress on scheduling it because it involves staff time.
Now, the DOC is proposing to eliminate contact visits in county jails. And for Carol Blakeney, the thought of that is devastating. Her 24-year-old son is incarcerated at the Maine State Prison. Before that, he spent nearly a year in the Cumberland County Jail, where she says the only way she could talk to him was through a glass partition on a phone.
And I can tell you that was bad enough, because not being able to hug him or hold his hand for months at a time. This is the most difficult times I've ever had as a mother.
Now that her son is at the Maine State Prison, she is able to visit him in person. She says those visits and the time she spends with God are what get her through each week. She remembers the first time she was able to meet with her son with no glass between them.
So it had been a year that we finally were able to have that contact visit, and we had that first hug. And I can't even begin to describe to you what that feels like. Neither one of us would let go. I think it was the longest hug that we ever had. And we've had contact ever since then.
Studies show that in-person visits, even behind glass, are important because they help maintain family ties and reduce the likelihood that a prisoner will reoffend. Even the DOC's own mission statement says that it will provide, quote, practices, programs, and services which are evidence-based. In doing so, Claire Berkowitz of the Children's Alliance of Maine says the DOC should consider the psychological effects on 20,000 Maine children affected by parental incarceration. Berkowitz says Maine's parental incarceration rate of 8% is the highest in New England and higher than the national average. Most of the kids are poor, live in rural Maine, and about 25% are under age 5.
If we want Maine children of incarcerated parents to have a chance at success, we need to make sure that they are supported while they are separated from their parent. This starts with doing all that we can to maintain the parent-child bond while a mom or dad is incarcerated.
Ensuring in-person visitation is a simple way to reduce or mitigate the psychological damage to kids whose lives are affected by parental incarceration, Berkowitz says. Echoing that point, Maine State Prison inmate Anthony Normand wrote a letter to the DOC saying contact visits are important to everyone in a family. He said there's a fear that DOC could soon move to end contact visits at the prison as well. Just today, my wife and granddaughter came to visit me, Normand wrote. There is nothing like seeing a 3-year-old little girl as she comes running to you with open arms. How does taking away physical family contact correct a person? He asked. Written comments on the proposed policy change are being accepted by the DOC until August 30th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Now, imagine this scenario. You work in a store and you overhear your boss instruct another employee to keep an eye on some customers because, according to the boss, those kinds of people steal. What do you do? Well, it's a question that was raised as part of a training this week in Lewiston, Auburn, on how to intervene safely in cases of public harassment or violence. Patty White has more.
So what would you do if your boss asked you to follow a customer? One participant at the training suggests a couple of options.
Ask the employee to do something else with you, so another work task. Volunteer to do that in place of the employee, then don't.
Participants are practicing quick, easy ways to respond when they see harassment or violence in their communities. There's a need for this kind of bystander training in Lewiston and Auburn, says Jan Phillips. She's a member of a local group called Community of Kindness. It formed last December after she and others witnessed more incidences of harassment, particularly toward refugees and immigrants.
We'd talked about it with other people, and they'd say, I just didn't know what to do. And we thought, if we knew what to do, we could make our community even stronger.
Others in the community also noticed that seemingly small incidents were actually a growing problem. Kathy Durgan-Layton is executive director of the YWCA in Lewiston.
Also, what we knew is that it was those of us who are the bystanders, mainly the white people in the community, that needed to intervene, that it was not fair to ask the victims to be the ones to intervene.
Community of Kindness partnered with the YWCA to bring the national organization Green Dot Etc. to Lewiston to train representatives from a broad range of organizations on how to make the leap from passive to active bystander. It's the first time Green Dot is focusing specifically on harassment. The nonprofit typically trains schools and organizations, including Bates College, to prevent sexual and domestic violence. But the general approach is the same. During the kickoff, trainer Alberto Lorenzo displays a community map that's scattered with red dots.
And every time that a red dot gets on that map, it represents a moment in time, a choice that someone makes to harm another person, a choice that someone makes to use his or her words or actions to intimidate another person.
Lorenzo explains that bystanders can also make choices in those moments. They can intervene to defuse the situation and turn it into a so-called green dot. If enough people take individual action, the idea is it will create a larger cultural change that prevents these incidents.
So one thing we learn in America as immigrants is that collective voices matter in this country.
Fausia Musa is an outreach worker for Healthy Androscoggin. She's doing the training because she says she's noticed increased Islamophobia since President Trump was elected.
Silence is a problem. A lot of Americans don't know how to react when things, incidents of racial and Islamophobia are taking place.
But reacting doesn't have to be difficult, says Kristen Cloutier. She's the president of the Lewiston City Council. She also works at Bates College and has done Green Dot workshops on campus.
I think it allows people to sort of speak up or make a statement about their values in ways that are less threatening than people might feel they would need to be.
Green Dot teaches that bystanders can intervene in three different ways. They can be direct, they can distract, or they can delegate to someone who may be in a better position to take action. Cloutier says she put her previous trainings to use a couple weeks ago when she was grocery shopping and saw a new Mainer being harassed.
Where, you know, normally I probably wouldn't have said anything because I was there with my child. And sometimes that can feel really intimidating because you don't want to put yourself in harm's way and you don't want to put your family member in harm's way. But it also kind of, because I'd had the training, sort of got in my head, like, well, what kind of an example actually am I setting for my daughter if I don't say something here?
She intervened, and she says the tension was diffused. The goal of the training organizers say is that actions like Cloutier's will become the norm rather than the exception. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.